Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could tune in today. And before we get started, I want to remind the listeners that just because you hear something today that sounds like a good tax strategy or perhaps a good investment opportunity, please check with your existing advisors before you make any kind of financial decision. And for those of you that may not have advisors, then you're welcome to go to our website at baplannershow.com and go to the forms page. The first form, step one, is the client profile. And if you would be kind enough to complete that form and submit it, then I am happy to consult with you at some point on the phone if you'd like to schedule a call and see how we might be able to assist you in meeting your goals. And most of our clients are involved in the real estate arena, private partnership syndications of multifamily assets is, I would suggest, the sweet spot for what we do. And there is a bit of complication involved in making those investments, and we understand how to read the documents that are involved, and we'll help you understand what you're potentially going to sign up for. And if you've never been a member of a partnership in general, much less a real estate partnership, you would do well to engage with someone like ourselves, CPAs, or maybe a tax attorney that's also a CPA, and make sure you understand, again, what you're signing up for. Otherwise, you may be surprised. And it's not just respect to the overall concept of a real estate private partnership, but when I say understand what you're signing up for, every project you look at will be different. There's different assumptions that get applied to rental growth rates, to cap rates, either when you buy the property or refinance it or sell it. And if you don't understand those variables, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Again, I would step back and, you know, wait. There'll be another train coming along in you know, a few minutes, as the expression goes, and you want to make sure you get on the right train. And for those of you, as an example, that might be close to retirement, you need a different train than someone that doesn't need their money to be available to them, the income off of the project, the cash flows, until, you know, years down the road. Two different types of people, two different types of partnerships that you'd like to find, and you got to make sure that you're timing the distributions with your need to pay your living cost as you move forward. And, you know, if you think about it, in today's times, our life expectancies are significantly longer than even 10 years ago or 20 years ago they might have been. And I know even the IRS tables, the life expectancy tables, assume that us males are going to live to the ripe old age of 85 to 86, and females to 87 to 88 timeline. And so, you know, if you think about how much you need to live each year and then multiply that out, it's a lot of money. In most of my clients' cases, anyway, it's a lot of money. And Social Security isn't going to cut it. And I'm assuming when I say that, even the full amount of Social Security that you might be receiving now. And for those of you that aren't following the deficit situation, which I talk about often on this program, we are running out of the remaining small sliver of the discretionary portion of the federal budget very soon, near term, 2027, 28, 29, somewhere in that area. It depends on a lot of things that happen, still yet to be defined between now and then, but there's no way we get past 2030 without having eclipsed that total, the discretionary part of the budget. And that's the part of the budget that's not already spoken for. It's, you know, when you think about the overall federal spending, you've got certain amounts that are already baked into the statutes. They've already been passed, indexing on Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, et cetera. A lot of the budget, if you look forward, is already spoken for. It's already done. No more voting needs to occur. It's simply which budget cycle does it affect. And when we run out of the remaining discretionary portion of the budget, we will no longer be able to pay 100% of the interest that's due on our cumulative roughly $35 trillion, that's trillion with a T, cumulative deficit. You know, we basically spend $7 trillion a year just in round numbers. We collect about $5 trillion in receipts. And we've got an average of $2 or $2.1 trillion deficits as far out as the 10-year forecast that the Congressional Budget Office releases each year. They just updated it earlier this year, and through 2034, we'll have an average of about $2 or $2.1 trillion. And again, you may see some estimates that differ if the assumption set that got applied by assorted economists, it does vary. But there's nobody that thinks that a $35 trillion, that's currently, it'll be $54 trillion 10 years out, $54 to $55 trillion in 10 years. There's nobody that understands economics that thinks that's a problem, or that thinks it's not a problem. I'm sorry. I mean, there are a few. In fact, there's one running for president, and it's not the red man, as they call Mr. Trump. It's the other one that doesn't seem to understand that there seems to be a certain economic illiteracy that's part of the blue state folks, to where they don't seem to understand there's a finite limit to how much money we can print. And you think inflation got out of control a year or two ago, and it's still... By the way, we're not back to where we started. I know you would see, if you watch some of the DNC convention here this past week, you would seem to think that inflation had been solved. Well, you know, we've got very little inflation now. Well, what about the 25% increase, at least, and the price of everything? We're not seeing that reduced, right? And I don't know if it ever will be. Historically, when's the last time you can remember prices going down on almost anything, right? And so when they talk about, well, inflation is more under control now, or back under control, what they're referring to is the increase, the current increase in prices has paused, but it hasn't reversed. And that's critical for those of you that may be wondering, well, gee, if inflation stopped, why is my rent still so high? Or why does it cost so much to go out and eat at a restaurant? I mean, Houston restaurants, I travel a lot. Some of you may recall that I live overseas much of the time. I do happen to be here in Houston and San Antonio each week now at the moment. And, you know, I miss Thailand. I miss the fact that did prices go up in Thailand? Yeah, they went up a little bit. Did they double? I mean, the restaurants that you used to go eat at, maybe you and your friend or associate or family member, you might spend $50 or $60. You can tell me and my son go cheap, you know, when we go out to eat in Houston. It's twice that now. It's insane. And then, you know, you and I'm going to vent just a little bit as an accountant. And, you know, these payment devices they stick on your table, like I had one at Chili's the other night, and they've already got the tips calculated at you know, several different calculations. Well, now those calculations start at 18%. And that's on top of prices that have gone up at least 50 to 70%, maybe more. And so it just keeps snowballing. It's like there's no recognition of the fact that, hey, if food prices went up 60 or 70% in your restaurant, the 15% tip is already over those levels without you adding any increase to the 15%, right? So if you're tipping 20%, that's effectively a 70% add-on, or I guess maybe 5% plus the 50%. But it's already a big boost, is the point I'm trying to make. And you know, I am following this tipping scenario closely. I've seen some articles in the Wall Street Journal. And I don't mean to be a party pooper. I will tip for exceptional service. Otherwise, when I walk up to a counter and I place an order, and then I've got to go up and get my food, I've got to do everything else, get my drink. Hey, I'm sorry. That's not the type of service I'm going to tip with. And I used to be shamed into doing it. And now I see where so many people across the country are saying, no, you know, I'm not doing it. And so I have no problem now. I'll tip more when it's warranted, and I won't tip at all if it's already, you know, built into the basic 15% level tip. Fine, I'm okay with that in many cases, but not when it's self-service. Anyway, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will come back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like
with big dreams and faded jeans.
Second segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, if you hear something on the air here or with anybody else for that matter that involves your financial situation, please get a second or a third opinion as to what you heard to make sure that you heard it right and that the interpretation to your specific facts and circumstances might yield a positive outcome if you were to undertake such advice. And, you know, we, you know, as far as this show goes, I'm going to suggest that none of the hosts that you hear on this show are rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. We're looking more to make you aware of certain things, maybe a bit of education. We try to make it entertaining, although we're not selling entertainment like some of the real estate gurus seem to be, because they disclose or disclaim that at the top and bottom of each of their shows. And, you know, frankly, you know, this is your financial future that we're dealing with here. It should not be produced as a entertainment. Entertainment to me is something that might be fake, and maybe it's just designed to get a chuckle out of you or to make you feel good. What we're doing, we're trying to help you deal with the financial requirements and obligations that you're going to have for the rest of your life. And again, in most people's case, that's a long time if you're statistically in the margins, you know, based on life expectancy, et cetera. And you've got to have a significant amount of money, much more so than what people used to think. I mean, they used to say, well, you know, I've got $1 million in my 401. I believe that's enough to retire. Well, let me correct your misunderstanding. If you're talking about a traditional 401 or IRA account, I mean, this logic's the same, or any other retirement plan, and it involves pre-tax funds, then when you tell me you have $1 million, no, you're wrong. You don't have anywhere near $1 million. And when you look at the fact that tax rates must go up, as I mentioned in the prior segment, remaining portion of the discretionary piece of the federal budget will soon be gone. The next 4 to 5, maybe 6 years at best, if we can get GDP up, it'll forestall the catastrophe that's otherwise going to happen. There's no way we can raise GDP enough. I mean, unless you could find the GDP seeds to plant 2 or 3 more GDP trees, being a little facetious, there's no way to raise enough tax revenue to make a dent in our deficit. I mean, you could, you know, the Republicans say, well, we should quit giving aid to all the foreign countries that we give aid to. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Guess what? That number multiplied by 10 won't even make a dent in $35 trillion, much less the true deficit, which is closer to $200 trillion, again, depending on your assumption set. But understand, when CBO, Congressional Budget Office, or when congressmen refer to the $35 trillion cumulative deficit, it's not that that's not bad enough. It is. I don't think anybody really has a good idea of how we're going to deal with even $35 trillion. But that's just the portion of the obligations we have that we recognize currently, because the other, $165 trillion, if we can settle on $200 trillion as being the top of that actual cumulative deficit that we've committed to. These are for expenditures that have already been voted on. They've already been put into the statute. It's simply we're not there yet time-wise. So the current budgetary cycle doesn't include that. Now, for those of you that run a business, you're probably thinking, well, wait a minute, how come my accountant books liabilities for ever, however long we got to go out, either short-term or long-term liabilities. But if I've committed to pay something, it's accrued and placed on my balance sheet in most cases, if you want to issue financials according to GAAP, which is the generally accepted accounting principles. And our government, our economy, our country is the only one of the developed economies, developed nations, that doesn't book those liabilities. All the other developed economies, developed countries, et cetera, record those liabilities on their balance sheet. And so it's worse than it appears. And so that's why when I say if the Republicans could get agreement with the Democrats and say, well, we're not going to contribute funds to people like Ukrainians and Israelis and Taiwanese, and just go down the list, Mexico, Central America. We give money to many, many, many nations. That said, add all that up, multiply it by 10, and you're still not even going to put a dent in the deficit. And Democrats will say, well, you know, we need to tax the wealthy. We need to tax our billionaires. You know, Mr. Biden keeps referring to the fact that we have 1,000 billionaires in the U.S. And what I'm going to tell you is you could, don't just tax them. He talks about, well, you know, if they paid, I forget the number he uses, I think it's 18% to 21% in tax, he says, you know, that would be closer to their fair share. And yet, of course, if you press on any of the left and ask them, well, what's the fair share, none of them can answer that question. They just know it's more than what we're getting now. And most of them don't understand taxes enough to understand exactly why they think that the billionaires don't pay their, quote, fair share. You know, there's a lot of ways to pay tax, and I think they fixate on, they fixate on the fact that there's unrealized gains that aren't getting taxed. And that's part of, I think, Senator Harris's, or Vice President Harris, and I believe it was part of, it was part of the Build Back Better Act that, thank goodness, Biden was unable to get passed. But it was going to go after unrealized gains. And just one example would be if you had a business, a family business that you owned, farm, you know, a retail store, real estate, whatever. If Build Back Better had passed, when you pass away, your heirs would get taxed on the gain that effectively was unrealized at your date of death. In other words, you could have passed it on to your heirs under the current rules. That action would typically not be taxable. So the heirs could continue to own it, sell it someday later, and have a capital gain. Well, that was going to go away, and they were going to have to mark it to market. So you're going to have to take the value at the date of passing, generally, and pay tax on that unrealized gain. Even though you hadn't sold it and received the funds, you were going to get to pay tax on it. And that's what Vice President Harris is currently pitching. And, you know, there's a certain sense of equity that seems to be missing in this picture. You know, how is it fair and equitable if, you know, you've got to pay tax on something that you haven't received the benefit for? And that's how this group thinks. It's Elizabeth Warren, I believe she's the one that originally, or maybe Bernie Sanders, one of those two, maybe both, are the ones that were promoting that concept. And it just runs counter to many, many years of the U.S. tax code, where there's very few items that you're taxed on that are not yet realized, where you haven't entered into a transaction with a buyer to pay you money that you have to pay tax on. In any event, back to the real estate private partnership arena, I want to make sure that listeners understand that we don't recommend specific transactions that you may hear us discuss. We don't recommend necessarily recommend a specific syndicator, a sponsor, a lead partner. These are the same word for multiple roles. The folks that will serve as the manager in a transaction, who's responsible for choosing the property, performing due diligence, and arranging its acquisition. That includes undertaking the necessary debt placement. So they're going to go out and find a lending institution. They're also going to go out and raise capital to the extent needed from passive investors, people like you and I. And you know, the manager role is key to why we like real estate private partnership multifamily syndications, because the manager's the one that gets to get out of bed in the morning and go run those beat up old Class C apartments that we like to acquire, make them nice, bring the amenity set along with the rental rates up to market, and therefore increase the value of the asset that we just purchased. And that can happen anywhere. I've seen transactions that happened in 6 months to a year that doubled in value, or at least doubled the equity component of the value, to, you know, 2 or 3 years. And then you refinance it and pull the investor money out, or in large measure, most of the investor money. You still own the asset. You still have interim cash flows, theoretically, and you're able to sell that asset, you know, 5, 6, 7 years into the future. And that's a big difference between, or looking, if you're comparing investing money in single family versus multifamily, big difference in the way those asset values get calculated. You know, single family, no matter how well you manage your single family properties, your cap on how much you can sell it for is typically determined by how much your neighbors have sold their homes for in the prior 2 months to 6 months. Price per foot is generally going to be the common denominator, and that's going to limit what you'll be able to sell yours for. It doesn't matter how well you've managed them. If you've got rental properties, you're going to be capped at a price akin to the comps from other sellers. Whereas the multifamily arena, valuations are based on net operating income. In other words, we like buying beat up old Class C apartments. We like making them beautiful. We add amenities that the current new builds have, like bark parks for the dogs and media rooms and smart home packages, wood-like, quote-unquote, flooring. There's a number of things that can be added to an older property to bring it up to new or newer that allow us to raise the rents so that literally that asset can go way up in value. It seems like it's overnight, and it is compared to a single-family property where, you know, most single-family properties, my experience has been that, you know, if you buy a home, just think about your own home. You know, if you bought it 10 to 15 years ago, it may have doubled by now. In fact, likely has. The ability for you to, you know, get into the game, you know, you can do that just on the home you're living in and watch how it goes up. I've got clients in the Houston market that bought, you know, just outside the Loop 610, way back in the day, call it late 60s, early 70s, they maybe paid $30,000, and now the home is selling for more than $500,000. And they didn't, when they bought that property, they weren't thinking, oh, if we buy it now, it's going to be worth $500,000 in 2024. But it happens while you're asleep in most cases, right? And so I don't begrudge people that think, well, you know, I want to buy single family because I understand a single family home. It's very similar to what I would buy to live in. They understand more about how to operate those homes. And yet I would tell you, again, the constraint on how much you're going to sell is going to be what your neighbors sold for recently. And that's not to say it's a bad thing. It's just to say that you're never going to significantly raise your investment value on a single family home, all things being equal, in a year or two, which you can absolutely do with multifamily. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a big multifamily, a 200 or 300 unit property. I like small apartments. I own an 8-unit building myself, and I'll just tell you, there's something to be said for small apartments that you can operate or pay a management fee to a property manager that focuses on smaller units. And what you will find is that often that's the best use of your capital. You know, we review transactions of the larger properties. I was just looking at one yesterday that, you know, it's not a huge property. It's, I think, is about 134 units up in the Dallas area, and Dallas or Fort Worth, somewhere in that area. And, you know, by the time the syndicator takes their 2% acquisition fee and has a 1% debt guarantee fee, and I don't think there was a refinance fee, but there are on many transactions, and then the disposition fee, another 1%, or maybe it was 2%, and they're getting a 25 to 30, 35% promote. That's the override that they get handed for putting the deal together. And that can scale up. I can't remember in this project. I just looked at it hurriedly. But I'm sure it's probably going to be similar to so many other transactions we look at, where once you've gotten a certain internal rate of return on your money, they scale the promote or the override up to a 50% threshold. And it's like when you look at how is your money being deployed, it's getting diluted, not diluted, although I might argue you're being diluted somewhat. It's being diluted, D-I-L-U-T-E-D, to where you're, let's say you put $100,000 in, well, at the end of the day, there's maybe only 50 that actually went into the asset, into acquiring and the ongoing capital operation that operations needs for the asset. Where'd the other 50% go? Well, it went into the syndicator's pocket. And, you know, that is something that it troubles me. I mean, since I've been around long enough to remember the good old days, just, you know, 4 and 5 years ago now, where there were none of these fees. The only fees were the obligatory 5% per year, 2% for typically for asset management, 3% for property management. That's pretty standard. You're going to pay that almost anywhere in the country, you know, give or take a percent. But there was none of this promote scaling up to 50% or higher. There was no acquisition fee. There was no debt placement fee, no capital raise fee, no refinance fee, no disposition fee. That was all what was expected you to do as a syndicator to get your 20 to 25% promote. But now it's that layered on. And when you look at recent transactions, we've had some of the best syndicators in America have properties go back to the lender. And guess what happens to your capital if you happen to be an owner in those properties? It's gone. You're not getting your hard-earned retirement money back if that's what you put into those transactions. And that's part of the issue on what you have to do to get comfortable before you give syndicators their money is find out, well, how much are we going to get clawed back on all these fees if you have a deal that goes south? And now is a good time. The wounds are fresh. And now if you're being looked at as a possible capital contributor to a deal, you need to ask the tough questions. And syndicators don't like it, but better you find out now they don't like it before you hand them your money. But essentially, my question is, okay, let's hope that all goes according to plan. We hit all your pro forma numbers. We all make a bunch of money. That's great. What happens if we don't? Are you going to give back some of your 2% acquisition fee? You know, on a $50 million deal, 2%'s $1 million. That's a lot of money to take off the top on day zero, by the way. That's what I call closing, is day zero. And again, the $1 million acquisition fee, those are for services that used to be the big driver on the reason that the syndicator gets the 20 or 25 or 30% promote. So, you know, this is why you want someone to help you decide and understand what you're signing up for. And then if it bothers you, make your demands known now before you contribute the funds. There are other partnerships that don't have the plethora of fees that I'm referring to, or how about you go buy your own small apartment building, and then you may give away 5% per year for management fees, but you're hanging on to the other roughly 45% that I mentioned your capital is being diluted. And, you know, it comes down to this, folks. You don't necessarily have to hit a grand slam to be successful with an investment that you control the bulk of it. In other words, you may partner with one other person or friend that you've met, one of these platforms. You know, we've got several local real estate investment platforms. Partner with a couple, maybe three or four people at the most, to where each of you take an active role in that operation. And one thing you're going to find that you won't get with the 300 and 800 unit type deals, you're going to get the tax write-offs in large measure right away. I mean, there's several hurdles to get over there. I'm saying that very generally. But the opportunity for you to recognize the losses that you're otherwise going to have to carry forward, likely until you sell either that asset or another, you don't necessarily get trapped with some of the same rules that, if you're doing it on your small apartment building where you're active in the management. And I don't necessarily mean you got to show up every day. What I mean is you got to be absolutely involved in operating. Maybe you're reviewing the leases, you're dealing with vendors, you're doing enough to justify being classified as an active operating partner. And if three or four of you folks get together and do that, you'll find it's a totally different experience than you giving your money to a syndicator, which all of us do. I still, from time to time, will invest that away. But for the most part, at the current moment, and I think for a while, it makes more sense if you just look at the throughput that comes off that money. You're better off with a situation where you can hit a double and get a double, as opposed to investing with the big project. And they've got to hit a grand slam just to get you a single when they're diluting your capital the way they are. Let's do this. I blew through the second break. Let's go ahead and take it, and we'll come back for about 10 minutes of wrap-up with this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones are made of my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. And I hope that
did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man, be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back to the final few minutes of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And, you know, I talked earlier about what we see our role as being when we work with clients, where we're trying to help you understand what you're signing up for regarding multiple types of real estate opportunities that you may be considering. And I know I had a call this week from a gentleman that's in the process of selling a successful business, and good for him. It's great when I love seeing entrepreneurs that have worked and poured their heart and soul into a company for a number of years, and now it's got value. And you know, he's looking like so many of the people we've worked with to put it into real estate, and he's doing what I'd like seeing, which is he's not focusing on the big partnerships. He's going to own something with one of his offspring, and you know, developing it from the dirt up, so to speak. You know, bought some land, he's building some rental property, and you know, that has enormous tax benefits that he will be able to yield, depending on how we structure it, literally right out of the gate. And it's totally different than if you were investing your money in syndications. But with that comes additional responsibilities. And you know, there are responsibilities that he's well suited for due to the business that he's in, that he's selling. But, you know, a lot of people want to be able to go traveling or living abroad, as I do. And so, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. But I guess the central theme is driven by real estate opportunities. And, you know, what an amazing, flexible asset class that some people look at it and see, well, gee, here's my opportunity to be passive. I can give my capital to somebody that is going to be on the ground, so to speak, going to be finding opportunities, going to invest in assets that theoretically will generate cash flows to where I don't have to show up every day. It's not a job for me anymore. You know, if you think about people that are retired, or maybe they just want to slow down somewhat and you know, still have the ability to produce. I know in my situation, I can go anywhere in the world. There's a good internet connection, and have. And I live in large measure, as I mentioned, in Southeast Asia. And I broadcast this show from our home there. I'm totally unconstrained in my lifestyle there in Thailand. And I encourage and recommend that any American that is able get outside the U.S. at least for 6 months to understand the rest of the world and the opportunities and the different people, you know, the way people think, the way they plan, the way they work as a family unit. I know I'm married to a Thai lady. We've got a 15-year-old son there, and it's been an incredible life experience for me to learn more and more. I mean, I'm still learning about the Thai lifestyle, and it's just absolutely different than the American lifestyle. And I don't want to say, I didn't say it's good or better or worse. I said it was different. And it's kind of like Mac OS and Windows operating systems. You know, Apple thinks theirs is better. And of course, Microsoft thinks theirs is. I just say, well, you know what? They're both different. And I like Mac, probably the only accountant you'll ever know that uses Macs instead of Windows PCs. And I feel like I'm the better for it. But I've got friends and associates that think I'm cuckoo for running Mac. They've run Windows, and they're, I guess, just as happy as I am. But anyway, part-time living abroad, or maybe full-time, is what I recommend people do to get a better feel. You'll know what to be thankful for, whichever side of the pond you end up finding that, and it just gives you a certain balance that others don't get in life. And, you know, I can help you with analyzing taxes, at least when it comes to the Thai equation. And I can help you understand what you're signing up for on that front. And very familiar with the different pressure points, push points, et cetera, in that situation. And then back to the opportunities real estate-wise, if you're interested in working with us, go to our website, baplannershow.com. Go to the forms link, fill out Form 1, Step 1, and that'll be the first step to how we might be able to work with you and sync up with your wealth creation objectives. We'll show you how to evaluate opportunities, whether it's a private placement offering or whether it's a development project. And hopefully, by helping you understand the nuances, you can select projects that'll help you achieve the highest odds of favorable outcomes. Okay, well, we're at the end of the show. Once again, we will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m., and then again on Sunday at 7 a.m., we'll have our fourth Cybersecurity Sunday show. We hope you can tune in. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.